Welcome to the new series of the Influential Women Podcast, the podcast where I chat to some inspiring women. This is Nikki Bannerman, and my influential woman today is Natasha Eales. Hello and welcome.
Hi. Well, hi. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, pleasure. It's lovely to talk to you. Now, Natasha is the founder and CEO of the award-winning social enterprise Bold Voices, who bring young people together to discuss huge challenges and to educate future generations. She is an entrepreneur and an educational speaker. On the Influential Women podcast, I chat to authors, broadcasters, celebrities and campaigners who are passionate about their cause in what has been described as an achingly human way, with 5-star reviews on Apple and available on all podcasting platforms, including Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, Spotify, and even Ask Alexa. But firstly, we want to put a supportive message out there to anyone who is affected by what we are discussing today to please seek help and support, as some of these topics are hard-hitting and life-changing. So where are you based, Natasha? Welcome. And how have you been during these mad times?
Thank you. So I'm based in London. I think how have I been in these mad times? I mean, it's hard to sort of sum up, isn't it? Feels like it's just been such a long time, a long time since normality. But we've had a strange journey because Bold Voices sort of took off in the middle and close to nearly a year ago. So I think I've had a very different experience of lockdown from a lot of people in kind of the last couple of years. Yes. It's been full on and exciting as well. So yeah.
Oh, full on and mad. And London must have been really surreal, actually, because it's, you know, normally so bustly, and when it's been like a ghost town.
So strange, actually. Like, we spent a lot of time going for lovely long walks just out around areas that usually you cannot move for people. Yeah. And during lockdown were just completely empty. I mean, it was amazing. It was eerie, but it was also beautiful to get that experience of London.
Amazing. So yes, how, any secret tips for staying cheerful in these mad times? Because we've all really struggled, haven't we? The highs have been higher, the lows have been lower. We've had really bad days, really good days. Anything to keep you smiling? Do you have any strategies?
For me, it has been fresh air, like making sure just getting outside is not, it's so easy to just stay inside, particularly in the winter. So for me, it's getting outside, getting fresh air. Yeah. Cooking something fresh, because I love cooking, so that for me is such a like de-stress for me, and trying to like turn technology off. Like, those are the three things. But having said that, I had so many days in lockdown where I didn't leave the house, where I didn't cook fresh food, and where I just watched TV.
Yeah, so. But at least you tried, and actually I think we all tried, and it's amazing, just those basics and those simple tools were so important, and they just literally were mood changers, weren't they? Game changers, goodness me. Have you learned anything about yourself in lockdown?
I mean, I'm sure I have. Again, it's 2 years, isn't it? It's 2 years. Yes. 2 years is a long time. Probably that I'm much like to embrace the introvert side of myself. There were definitely periods of lockdown that I quite enjoyed, and I know a lot, and I feel like it's a strange thing to say that, because I know how many people struggled, and it's a real privilege to have enjoyed that quiet time. But I definitely embraced it a lot of the time. And I think being in your 20s, being an introvert often feels like you're doing something wrong, like you're not quite doing it right. But I actually really like knowing that I've got a whole weekend to do nothing, no plans, but decompress and read books and be by myself or with my partner. So I think I've learned to embrace that side of myself as well.
But that's brilliant. And, you know, great role modelling in your 20s, because that FOMO, fear of missing out, is huge in your generation. Well, and everyone's generation, but particularly your generation, you know. And no one was on holiday and no one was doing anything fun. So actually it made us all feel better about ourselves in some weird way, didn't it?
Exactly.
So in your previous life, even though you're still done so much and still in your 20s, but you were an officer cadet and you worked in foreign policy before you became an entrepreneur. Wow. So you've always wanted to sort of rule and lead then, have you?
I suppose so. Yeah. I think it was a very interesting transition from that world into what I'm doing now. But I come from a military background, so that background for me has always been the one that's comfortable and familiar. Which I think if you're not from that sort of background, that seems strange, because it is very different. And a lot of people I speak to that don't have experience with the military have so many questions because it's a very specific environment that you're in. But that for me was the world I grew up in.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, so you're obviously very organised and used to, that sort of structure. But you've always campaigned to support women, and your degree was in gender and international relations. And that was where you found your inspiration and passion, wasn't it? It lit a fire in your belly, did it?
It absolutely did, like completely. It was the most transformational kind of educational year that I've ever had. I always enjoyed university. I always enjoyed studying. I did history as my undergrad and I loved that. But that gender year was completely transformational. And I think really it was just the frustration that I hadn't had access to that learning sooner, which I always come back to when people ask me, like, why did you start Bold Voices? But it really was this, like, why did I not learn about these issues sooner? Why wasn't I being taught about this at school or being given access to all of the incredible, like, educators that I learned about that year? So that was really the spark. And from there, I just didn't really look back. That was it.
Amazing. Now, we tackle all sorts of huge challenges on this podcast, but sometimes we cover some really hard-hitting subjects. And in the past, we've covered big subjects, including abuse, domestic abuse, and narcissistic abuse on previous episodes that are still available to listen to. But this is different. This is about our youths and our future generations. And you are all about changing society and our social constructs for the better for future generations, aren't you? How do you do that?
Yeah, well, that's what we're trying to do. That makes it such a big thing, isn't it? Trying to change like cultural attitudes and social constructs is huge. So we do that by creating spaces for young people to, I guess, develop a different lens on the world and to have conversations about issues of gender inequality and often social justice issues more widely within those conversations in a way that they potentially not done before. Our workshops are very open. We want young people to ask questions, to say things that they might in other spaces be concerned about saying for fear of what other people might think or how people might react. We want to create those spaces to talk about these issues and to do so with empathy. Empathy is so key here because these are difficult issues and you're going to be having those conversations alongside people that you think you might know well, but actually might hold experiences and trauma that you don't know about, which is often the case with these issues because we don't necessarily talk about them as openly as we might be able to. So really it's about starting conversations. It's one of the reasons why our name is Bold Voices, because although education is at the core of it, it's about getting people talking, not just sort of throwing knowledge at them, but giving them a space to talk and to develop new understandings of the world.
Yes, and for getting them to share their stories and have trust. And you're giving them context and hope and support as you start those conversations, which is just incredible. And you are now an award-winning social enterprise, which is incredible and so well-deserved. So gender relations. I looked up the definition online and it says that gender relations are the ways in which a culture or society defines the rights and responsibilities of men and women to each other. And we're talking now about young generations, about young boys and girls and how they relate to each other. So you work with schools and unis and presumably the government in terms of educating and changing thinking.
Yeah, absolutely. We don't actually work with the government yet. Hopefully one day we will.
Oh, I'm sure will. They'll definitely hear about you because I read, you know, the foundations of Bold Voices, and a great name, by the way, founded everything you learned that year at university from the books, the people you studied with, but also hearing the shared experiences and what we will term in this interview as sort of non-consensual sex and sexual violence, as you mentioned, which is a huge shocking culture at university and schools now, isn't it?
Yeah, it absolutely is. And it's so pervasive. And I think that's the thing that a year ago we were really struggling with Bold Voices, was to get across the awareness that this was an issue that was urgent, that needed solving. There was just such a, continued to be even post Me Too, such a silencing of these issues and a reluctance to acknowledge that these are issues that need to be tackled now and that it can't wait. And that they're not just a normal part of society and growing up and, you know, just putting up with that person making a comment about the length of your skirt or whatever it might be, all of those things that to a lot of people seem trivial, but are part of this bigger culture that are happening daily to people and leading to those experiences that are more potentially more extreme, and could lead to that longer term trauma. So yeah, it's a really big one, but at the core of it is just everybody's experiences every day, and not just women and marginalized genders, but men and boys too. And we talk about that a lot, particularly with young people. You know, anybody can be a victim of sexual harassment, sexual violence, but we do include that gendered lens to understand who potentially might be more vulnerable to it, and where these issues are coming from as well, where it's stemming from. So we talk a lot about gender stereotypes and constructions of these, of gender within society. Sorry, yeah. I feel like I go off on this long tangent.
No, it's amazing, and it's so important. My goodness. And it's been such a gap that you identified in the market and for schools. And it's something that, you know, as a parent myself, and maybe, you know, in the education system, they're just not aware of actually what is going on. And it's when young people such as yourselves bring bold voices and teach, discuss and tackle gender inequality and these new cultures. But where is this thinking and this entitlement and violence coming from for young people? Is it films or social media or peer groups? Has your research looked at that?
Yeah. Well, this is one of the questions that we talk about with young people is, where do we learn these things from? Where do we learn both the things, again, the things that might appear to be trivial, things like gender stereotypes and language and attitudes, all the way up to those experiences, you know, where do we learn them from? Where do they come from? And, you know, there's no definitive answer to that, because it's everywhere, right? It's in our upbringing. It's in the books and TV shows that we watch as, you know, as toddlers, as kids, that teach us about gender. And then as we grow older, it's in all the media and pop culture that we consume. It's in our peers. It's in history and tradition. And one of the things we talk about with them is the way it's essentially baked into our structures, you know, how society works, our justice system, our political system, all of these different systems, structures within society hold different gender inequalities, different gender ideas that impact on these things. And that's part of the big challenge of tackling it, right? Because it's everywhere, it's so pervasive. We do focus a lot with young people on media and pop culture, because that is it's fascinating, but that is a big element of this.
Yes, and the language and the lyrics and you know, it's eye-opening. And your team, they're largely young voices, aren't they? You've got a huge team. You've got some incredibly experienced directors, and I think your mum's involved as well, isn't she? But, you know, you've got a lot of young people. You're all in your 20s, aren't you?
So our facilitators are, then we're not all in our 20s, but a lot of us are. So we've got a couple of facilitators who are a bit older, who've been working with young people for years, which is amazing, because we really wanted that balance of, you know, experience working in this space as well as that youth voice. But yeah, our currently now our close, not close team, but our sort of more permanent staff members are all in their 20s. And
amazing.
Yeah, it definitely makes a big difference going into schools. And we hear that feedback from young people all the time, you know, talking to people who are experiencing what we are and can use the language. And I'm already, I always joke about this with my team, like, I'm already too old to pick up on the language that's being used. Like,
really?
Yeah.
But you're so relatable. You know, you left uni, 3 years ago yourself, didn't you?
Oh, no. A few months. So I'm 28 now. So I left uni, well, it must be like 5 years ago.
5 years ago.
Okay, that's what the pandemic has done.
Yes. Oh, it's added a few. Still very relatable, you know. And I think, obviously, the young people, and they would find somebody like you in their 20s very relatable to talk to and share. And luckily, a lot of the youths do overshare, don't they, now, which is important. But you provide the tools to talk. Communication is hugely key. And you have digital sessions, online resources, amazing. You're a passionate campaigner about the rights of young people, and particularly young women as well as boys. So really, as parents and the education system, we need to be proactive about this safeguarding issue in schools and more aware. So it's about awareness. So in terms of actually awareness and what it involves, because it goes on everywhere, in school, on the streets, at university, in relationships, online, what does it involve? You've got some statistics and you've got some issues. that actually occur with young people. Do you want to just go through some of those in terms of the gender violence that is happening, from sharing photos to blaming and embarrassment? What is going on?
So we use the idea of a continuum as kind of the premise for a lot of our conversations in education, because it's a really great way of understanding this continuum spectrum of gender-based violence that is occurring. And on that continuum, and it should be somewhere on our website, but it's also on our social media and things like that. But it starts at the bottom with this, with stereotype, with language, with attitudes, picking up on things like victim blaming, slut shaming, recognizing that jokes that trivialize violence and stereotypes that are embedded into our language and every day, this is part of that, that some of those experiences of gender-based violence at that level. And then as we work our way up that continuum, we start to think a little bit more about experiences of sexual harassment. So everything from in public, you know, catcalling on the street, unwanted comments, stalking, staring, all of those things that you might experience in a public space, both on the street, but also public transport and in public spaces like schools, like universities, like workplaces. And then obviously we have the digital sphere, the online sphere as well, both public and private. So you've got your Instagram threads, you've got your TikTok threads, but then you've also got your DMs, your WhatsApp messages, your private group messaging chats. So you've public and private spaces online. Mm-hmm. And then as you head towards the top of that continuum, you start to move into, the sort of what we consider to be more extreme experiences of sexual violence. And depending on the age groups, you know, we'll talk about a whole range of different issues within that, not just issues of kind of assault and violence, but also ones of, looking at child marriage, looking at those rates across the world, looking at sex trafficking, looking at female genital mutilation. So we kind of go in, we look at the fact that gender-based violence is a global issue. And although it might seem like those are issues that are facing, women, girls and marginalized genders in other countries, actually what happens in our country and in our community is going to affect and be affected by what is happening globally.
Gosh, it's incredible what you do. But even things like, you know, do pupils know that sharing intimate photos of someone without their consent is a form of gender violence?
A lot of the time, no.
a lot of your research online, the stats said 6% of 13 to 17-year-olds have had their nude or nearly nude images shared without their permission. Some of these statistics you've said, yes, do share some of those.
Yeah. So that one's really interesting, and it's also the fact that 41% have witnessed that happening. So it's not just, so that 6% is obviously, you know, horrendous, that 6% of young people who've had their nude image shared, but then 41% have witnessed that. So they've either witnessed it and potentially not said anything or not known that it's wrong. They've witnessed it and not felt able to speak out about it. Yes. Or potentially as well, they have, they've experienced other forms of online sexual harassment that they haven't considered to be sexual harassment. Things like cyber flashing, which is sending a nude image to someone without their consent. Now, cyber flashing is an interesting one at the moment because that's still not a specific legal offence. So flashing in person is, but cyber flashing is not. And it's also incredibly common, having a nude image just shared with you, whether that's from someone that you know. Or often it can happen in public where it's from a stranger. It gets airdropped to your phone. You don't know who sent it to you. That's happened to me before on a train.
Oh, my God. But I think adults particularly, you know, are semi-aware of this. I remember going to a talk, you know, the beginning of senior school at my daughter's school, and they were all talking about the statistics and this could happen. I will now tell my child this. If this ever happens, then do this or nothing. So that you don't get into that set, or talk to me. And keeping those open communication, particularly for parents, something I always try to do and encourage everyone to do, because it's just terrifying. It is really terrifying, particularly as a parent. I read your stats as well. 1/3 of 16 to 18-year-old girls have experienced groping or unwanted sexual touching, which is 33%, is huge. As you said, some have witnessed this happening. Shockingly, your stats said 62% of students have reported experiencing a form of sexual violence during university, which is really saddening. It's so high and so shocking, and nothing that parents can do to help.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, in terms of how parents can help, it's moving away from the normalization of these issues. And we talk about this a lot with parents that we work with, is that there's a real fine balance between being shocked by something, but being shocked to the extent that then young people don't feel like they can come to you. So I remember with the Ofsted review that came out in the summer, obviously that came from the kind of everyone's invited testimonies, and then Ofsted did their review into these issues in schools. And one of the things they found was that, you know, girls can be pestered or pressured into sending nudes daily. And one girl that they interviewed said that she'd had as many as 10 boys ask her in one night for a nude. Mm-hmm. And when I spoke to teachers and parents about that, they were completely shocked. They're like, that is, I cannot believe that. And then when I spoke to some young people about it, they were like, it's just can be really frustrating when the adults are so shocked by this, because yeah, that's happening every single day. And it almost creates a barrier between you and then young people, because they see how far away your experience is.
I mean, it's not, you know, perceived as normal, but it's perceived as normal by the youths that this is a daily occurrence, and they all talk about it. Thank goodness they all talk about it to each other, and there's companies like you and supporters like you out there to help people. Because your Brooke study that you mentioned of university students found that the 56% of students who reported experiencing unwanted sexual behaviours, only 15% of them realised that it was sexual harassment.
This is a huge problem that we find. And this is not just young people, I have to say. This is everybody. Not necessarily being able to identify experiences that they have had as sexual harassment or sexual violence. So, and you mentioned that stat before about how 33% of girls had experienced unwanted touching or groping at school. If you said to the majority of girls in school, like, have you experienced sexual harassment or unwanted touching and groping in school, they would say no. But if you'd say to them, have you had your bra strap pinched, or have you had your bum sapped, or have you had this, you know, this specific thing happen to you, they'd be like, oh yeah, that happens all the time.
Really?
So this is part of the problem, is education is getting them to see that thing they experience is sexual harassment and shouldn't be happy. But I think it goes beyond that as well, because even when you have that education, we can be reluctant to label our experiences as such. And I think it part of it is our social cultural attitudes of shaming victims, blaming victims for what happened to them. So you don't want to say, yes, I've experienced sexual harassment or violence, because you're worried about the repercussions of that, the fallout of those attitudes that exist. So there's so many layers to why young people and older people, adults as well, don't label their experiences in the way that those kind of definitions and legal definitions as well.
And using some of the language as well, isn't it? But also some that don't report or mention or share can internalise and then lead to anxiety and depression or worse. And really, anyone listening that is troubled by this, to reach out to companies such as Bold Voices, to charities, to professionals that can help. So your mission lies at the core of everything, to empower young people, really. And it is life-changing, change the wording from being shocking and shameful or embarrassing, to discuss it, to talk about things openly, to give context, and to change the culture that normalises or glorifies what is going on. So the positive ways forward, role models, presumably, such as yourselves, and sharing good news stories.
Yeah, definitely. I think also for us at the moment with Bold Voices, we're really trying hard to seek out and find as many positive male role models in this space as well. You know, what's amazing now is that it can be relatively easy to find amazing women who are fighting for these things, right? That's happened for a long time. But what we're trying to do is, particularly because a lot, you know, we work with teenagers of all gender in the work that we do. And we can see the real frustration from a lot of young men and boys who don't know what their place is in this, and they want to learn, they want to be a part of it, but they're not quite sure. Part of the problem is they don't have those role models of adults who are showing them, this is how, as a man or as a boy, you can be a part of this conversation. So I think that's changing slowly, but it's still something that we're really desperate for at Bold Voices. But role models are really key. Sharing the positive news that is happening, the work. Like, we have a ambassador program that we've launched this year in schools. So we're working with 14 schools across the country. with a small group of pupils from each school, and they're running campaigns and raising awareness and delivering education to the younger years and all of this amazing work that's happening. And, and we're really doing our best to amplify that at Bold Voices and show that like young people really want change to happen, and they're ready and willing to kind of lead that within their schools as well. And that's exciting.
And these subjects in school are so important. And there's so many other subjects I wish were taught in school. You know, brilliant, you're changing the conversation. And putting spotlight on healthier relationships and mutual respect to both genders. You know, men listen to this podcast too. And it's brilliant that they share and help and uplift, because I always think with this podcast, it was created, you know, initially to help women, but men, of course, we want to help as well. And if we can change the mindset, the day, or even the life of anybody, then, you know, mission accomplished. And that's what you're doing, and that's what we're trying to do. And getting people to share their stories. You're really starting a movement, aren't you, for people that have been through stuff, without shame or embarrassment, to come and help others so that they don't have to follow in that same path, don't you? It shouldn't be a norm. Even from as young as 9 years old, some of the children have been affected by things, haven't they, that you've mentioned?
Yeah, absolutely. This thing, it is happening. And it's so difficult, isn't it? Because you talking about these issues that are really hard, it's a lot, and it's a lot for parents to worry about this with their children, and it's a lot to put on teachers and schools as well, because they're already dealing with so much. And particularly during the pandemic, you know, the schools that we work with, young people and their mental health have been so affected by the last couple of years. Yes. So there is a real balance between, again, how do we look at the problem that exists and talk about it, and how do we look forward and be positive and create change. And that's a real balance that we have to meet in the work that we're doing.
Brilliant. And it's amazing that you're doing that critical conversation, education to change for future generations. Because even the entitlement and the spiking that's going on, that's shocking too. And it's, I think the bouncers are searching the men and the boys coming in, but then they're not allowed to search the girls. And all sorts of things are happening. Girls are spiking other girls.
I mean, yeah, the spiking that seems to have sort of taken off in the last year is, it raises a lot of different issues around safety, around also the extreme lengths that people will go to do these things. I mean, there have been reports of spiking by injection. It seems above and beyond what we considered to be happening before. Like, the problem is with checking people and things like that is, are you always going to find, if they know they're going to be checked, they're going to find other ways to bring substances into nightclubs and bars. But also, we're still not getting to the root of the problem there, you know, the reason why people think it's acceptable to spike. And the way that peer groups support each other to do it, you know, it's not just one-off people. These are friends, groups of people that are supporting each other to enact this. So coming back to the idea of, again, that stat you said earlier about how 6% of people have had their nude image shared without their consent, but 41% have witnessed it happening. Well, how many people are not necessarily doing the spiking themselves, but know that it's happening or witness it happening and don't necessarily do anything about it?
That's true, because that could happen there and then. And I believe, you know, they're getting more fearful about going to these clubs, or the bouncers are throwing people out thinking that they're drunk, and then they're becoming very dangerously ill on their own on the pavement with no help. It's terrifying. It's truly terrifying. So anything that you can do to change this culture, everything that you're doing is incredible to help. So keeping our young people safe and healthy means ensuring they have the right spaces for discussing these issues that you do, the development, the well-being and the safeguarding of our future generations, changing the stigma. I think it's truly brilliant, helping their well-being, their health and even their lives. And I'm in awe, as your parents must be, very proud of your wisdom and your vision. So in terms of help, the Influential Women podcast chats to women about their work, their life, their influences and their mantras, but about any personal adversity they've overcome to uplift others. So you're helping with everybody else's adversity. Is there anything that you have personally become empowered to help fight back and change people's thinking?
Do you know, I was reflecting on this adversity. It's an interesting word, isn't it? I think a lot of people expect me with Bold Voices to have my own kind of specific experience of sexual violence as the kind of spark for Bold Voices and the motivation. But I'll be honest, that is not the case. And I often wonder, I mean, this is because there are incredible survivors who use those horrendous experiences of trauma to then create change for others, which is amazing. This work is exhausting even without that trauma. So I'm constantly in awe of those that do that, because even without holding that trauma and processing that trauma, this is still exhausting work. It is, you know, you're talking about these heavy issues all the time. But
any setback or challenge that you've been through in your life, you know, we've covered from what some people might perceive as minor to them might be massive to somebody else, you know. So anything that you've come back fighting from, because by giving tips to others, it can change what they're going through. You know, it could be COVID or anything that's happened.
Yeah, I suppose for me, the toughest time that I've had was between my undergrad and my master's, where I suffered from quite like severe anxiety attacks and things like that. So what at the time I wasn't aware of, again, and this is often the case with mental health issues, isn't it? I wasn't really aware that was happening. But I think for me at the time, it was to do a lot with like changes in life, like life changes happening. I hadn't yet decided I was going to do a master's, so I'd graduated from my undergrad and I didn't really know what I was going to do. And I found that whole process, and being in your early 20s and leaving university and having no idea what the world is going to hold for you, even with all of the kind of privileges that I hold as an individual in terms of like financial support and like the education that I've had and the family and the support around me, it was still an incredibly difficult time. And yeah, I suffered from quite severe anxiety attacks at the time, which took me quite a few years to kind of work through. What's interesting is one of the biggest ways that it manifested itself was in kind of public spaces and crowds I wasn't able to be. So when I actually started my master's, I had to sit at the back of the lecture hall, so I felt like I had a kind of way to get out quickly if I needed to. And now my job is speaking to hundreds of people at a time.
Wow. So look how far you've come. But I think, thank you for sharing that, because I think, well, particularly during COVID, people have experienced huge anxiety and overwhelm and living in their own heads too much. And it's literally those strategies. And we've got a lot of previous guests that say that, like you said at the beginning, getting outside, box breathing, we've had people saying it really helps. Talking to friends, reaching out, knowing that it will get better. And the pressure on young people cannot be underestimated. And you know, that transition that you had, the transition they're all going through at the moment, and the pressure that's on them to get a place that you need to get a place in life, to get a job in this climate, is just truly overwhelming. And I think that the younger generations are coping better than the adults, because you're going through trauma and the world changing younger than us, and maybe learning new skills differently from the coping skills and resilience we've never had to learn. And now we're thinking, oh, I've spent all my life and not been through this, what do I do with that? And it's making, as you say, extroverts become introvert and think, oh, how does this feel? Or introverts try to be extrovert. And even going back out into the world now with things opening up is making people feel panicky and anxious and overwhelmed, because one of the previous podcasts I mentioned, they said it's called something like polar hibernation. It's a bit like when people go to the North Pole, South Pole for months on end. They can't readjust because their brain has literally changed. So it's the New Scientist reported on that. So you think, gosh, we need to be kinder to ourselves. You know, all generations are struggling. So thank you for sharing that. Your insight and knowledge will help parents, young women and girls know how to speak up and get their power back. So which strong women or men have inspired you then?
So this question made me think a lot. So many. But I think I first went back to thinking when I was growing up, who was inspiring me? And history was my like subject of passion when I was younger. So when I think back to being like when I went to uni, but also my like a couple of sixth form years at school, it was mainly kind of historical figures that inspired me.
So it's your history teacher you can thank. I certainly can't thank mine, because they were pretty vile to me, but you were obviously really good.
I had the most incredible history teacher, Mrs. Walker.
Walker, we're giving you a huge shout out there. Oh, she'll be chuffed to get that. It was like Adele, wasn't it? When Adele was doing her incredible concert with her huge, that reuniting with her teacher, that was quite overwhelming, wasn't it? I don't think mine would be that pleased to see me again. So passions, hobbies, you probably don't have any time for many hobbies, do you?
I play netball for a netball club in London, which I love, which keeps me sane. Wow. For sure. So I really enjoy doing that. Yeah, apart from that, it's mostly just cooking when I can, because when I love cooking for de-stressing, reading, doing all the usual relaxing things like that.
Good for you. So do you have a mantra for living your life then?
I have a few, but I think the one that is probably most relevant for today, for what we've talked about, is one of Ruth Bader Ginsburg's quotes, which is, fight for the things that you care about, but do it in a way that will lead others to join you. And I think that's always been something that has been at the core of Bold Voices, because what I've always felt with Bold Voices in the work that we do, the mission that we're doing, is there's no point in me changing my thinking and developing ideas if other people aren't, you know, able to do the same with the work that we're doing.
Amazing. Good for you. And any of your others have you got there that you can share?
Yeah, so I have one as well from Toni Morrison, which is, you are not the work you do, you are the person you are. And one of the reasons why I have this one, because it sounds a bit of a contradiction in terms of the work that I do, but when you start a business, regardless of the purpose behind the business, it becomes so difficult to detach yourself from that. I don't know who I am without Bold Voices. I'm not sure who Bold Voices is without me. And that's something that I'm working on. That's important, that Bold Voices exists separately from me. But so that's something that I try my hardest. It's an ongoing process, which is difficult, but it's a process. Yes.
Gosh, it must be. Well, and you've done so much and so, you know, helping so many and grown such a huge team and started it just before COVID, didn't you? And it's, you know, been incredible that you've been able to have these digital learning online during COVID and probably helped so many schools who were probably, you know, wavering about thinking, what do we do on this? So brilliant. So your next goal then?
We're still growing the team a lot at Bold Voices. And my next goal is being able to step back from facilitating, handing over to the amazing facilitators that we have, so that I can focus on the direction that Bold Voices is going in, really. That's my next goal. And speaking as what we were just talking about, is a bit more work-life balance is one of my goals for this year.
Oh, good for you.
Less working on the weekend and more enjoying.
Probably more getting outside and netball and doing more of that. Good for you, and more cooking. So lastly, what key message would you give to inspire and influence women and men, and particularly young women and young men, youth listening out there, to help them with their lives as we re-emerge?
I think my message would be to find the cause in the world that matters to you, because it is different for everybody. And I always say this when we go into schools, is we don't expect to turn every single young person into like a gender equality ambassador, because there'll be other things that are close to their heart, to their experiences, whatever that might be. So find that thing that you are passionate about and find a way to make a difference in that area. And it might seem like it's small, but the most powerful changes come from grassroots, from local organizations that know their communities, that make that difference. So it's find that issue that you're passionate about, whatever it might be, and do what you can to help in that area.
Oh, that's very wise. Thank you so much for that. Thank you for your time. And we'd encourage anyone affected by this podcast to seek help from the professionals or to reach out to Bold Voices for further additional support. Thank you, Natasha, for your amazing award-winning, well-deserved enterprise work. It's been so inspiring to chat to you, to know that you have the backs of young women and young men to tackle inequalities and help them feel more hopeful in this surreal world. Thank you for everything that you do. The Influential Women's Podcast is founded, hosted and exec produced by Nikki Bannerman and edited by assistant producer Dulcie Godfrey. Please keep listening and binge on more influential women on previous episodes. Please share messages on our social channels or visit our website at www.theinfluentialwomenpodcast.com. Thank you so much. Where can everyone find you? Bold Voices?
So our website is boldvoices.co.uk, and then on Instagram we are Hear This Bold Voice, like our merch here, Hear This Bold Voice on Instagram, and bold_voices on Twitter. So come and find us, or come and find our website and everything as well.
Brilliant. Thank you so much. Good luck with everything you do. You're doing an amazing, life-changing thing for so many people out there.